Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to another edition of Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, it's always fun to catch up with you, man, but I love the time before the show and after the show. I don't get to talk to you as much after the show because you jump on with the Good Morning NoCo fellas, but always just love picking your brain, whether it's about the Bears, the Big Sky Conference, college football in general. It's one of my favorite parts about the week.
It is mine too. After victories, you know, I kind of want to get to the show.
Yeah.
But after losses, I come in and I'm just so in my own head mm-hmm. for several days about all the things, you know, we needed to do different and the things we can do different the next game and et cetera. And so, you know, for you and I to be able to talk, you know, football, but not necessarily UNC football, or talk about our sons and the challenges that we have there with the autism and, their needs, you know, yeah, it is kind of a nice respite for me at times. And, I've enjoyed, you know, getting to know you in those moments. We have regular short meetings.
Yes, we do. We do. You know, and it's funny because the way we started this podcast, we sat down for breakfast and then boom, you were kind of like, hey, well, what about a weekly thing? And that was all it took. And we were able to do this each and every week. And I just really enjoy it. And then yes, the connection with our kids. I told you about this. My kid had his tonsils removed last Thursday. So that has been, you know, that's tough for any kid. But when you have a kid that's on the spectrum and they're having a hard time grasping what's going on, boy, that was an interesting situation. I was out Thursday and Friday, and we're on day 7 now. So I think there's light at the end of the tunnel, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many challenges that way the challenge for the kid is that they can't even tell you what's going on and yeah. can't articulate how they feel or hard to explain to them what's going on with their body. So, you know, I've been there and I think you have that same challenge and then the frustration that comes out from the kid. It's kind of heartbreaking mm-hmm. at times.
Oh, and it's, again, I wanted to ask you this though, you know, cause we have our ups and downs. You know, we've talked about that. We have our bright moments and we have our really frustrating moments. I was joking with my wife, though. I said, you know, there are some perks because when we checked into the hospital, you know, our ENT knows our situation. We got a room. You know, we're not waiting in the waiting room with the common folk. We get a room back where, like, close to where he's getting ready to do surgery. They bring out his little gown, and we're like, yeah, he's not gonna put that on. We don't have to mess with that. They gave him the good stuff 15 minutes before the surgery, so it kind of zonked him out a little bit. So there are some perks that come along with it. And, you know, you got to take advantage of those because we basically skip ahead in the line around the waiting room there and we get our own room situation. So that was not that it was fantastic in the room, but at least you're not in front of the entire waiting room going through the frustration and anxiety of an upcoming surgery.
I can relate to that. One of the real blessings in moving to Greeley has been, being able to meet and become friends with Tyler Richardson and his family. And Tyler, we don't meet a lot of boys like our boy, the specific autism yeah. and severity that he has with the nonverbal and, you know, even the potty training issue into adulthood, it looks like. And the violence, whether it's inadvertent or not, just, you know, him trying to get where he's going and us trying to corral him and make sure he doesn't get into other people's business. But we were having a difficult time a little over a year ago with Edward, and he, you know, it turned out later we found out he had mono, but it was just like we couldn't figure. We thought he was dying because he like wouldn't get up off the floor, and when we got him up off the floor, he would go right back down. He wouldn't eat. He wouldn't drink. You know, it was just like it was really scary. So anyway, you know, I was talking with Tyler, and he said, now I forget the name, but down at, I think it's Anschutz, and there's a, there's a part of that hospital that's dedicated to, you know, these special needs, autism, severe autism, neuropsych unit. Mm. He said, that's what it was. He said, call the neuropsych unit and you tell them you're not bringing an autistic kid. You're bringing the most autistic kid they've ever seen.
Mm.
And I started laughing, you know, because I thought that, like, we'll joke a lot because we have these challenges and sometimes you just have to laugh at them. And I started laughing. He goes, no, I'm serious. I learned that's what you have to say. And so same thing. We get there. It's an immediate, we're straight into a padded room.
Yeah.
You know, just us. So it's, I know where you're coming from. Like, there are sometimes within the medical profession, and it seems more and more, there are medical professionals who get it.
Yeah.
And get that challenge. And it can be really refreshing because we've all spent time at the grocery store or whatever where everybody's looking at us like, you know, we're bad parents. And you want to almost wear a sign that says, hey, here's what's going on. And, you know, sorry to disrupt your day.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. You know, it's interesting on that note too. Cause I told you, coach, we got a service dog back in March and he's amazing. We just love him. He's perfect for our kid. And so we put his little service dog vest on everywhere we go. And my wife will tell you, like, the looks that she used to get are a lot different than the looks she gets now when that dog is next to us, because they see Gavin getting upset or anxious. And then they look down at the dog and they're like, ah, that makes sense. And good for you guys. Like, those are the looks that she gets now. And it's unfortunate, but it's also taught us too. Like, when we see that, if we're out by ourselves and we're out somewhere and we see that, our brain instantly goes to, oh, I wonder if there's something going on.
Right.
You know, rather than just, wow, that's a terrible parent, letting them just do whatever. So it humbles you quickly, but there's a lot of different challenges. But there are, you got to take advantage of the perks when you get them.
Yeah, any empathy at all sometimes can just be so valuable in the situations that we're in. So I'm glad that the dog is doing some empathy signaling for you guys.
Ridiculous. And he you know, when I found out we were getting a service dog, when my wife was really getting passionate about it, I was like, is it going to be just like this perfect military type dog? And no, he's still a puppy. He's ridiculous. He annoys the crap out of me, but I love the crap out of him. But when he puts that vest on, something clicks. Mm. It's amazing. It's like he goes into business mode, but at home he's a typical 1 year old white lab. You know, he's destroying the trash cans. He's doing everything he can to possibly get into trouble. But when it comes to the kid, it changes. It's fascinating to me.
We bought and tried to train our own service dog. That didn't work out. So we don't have any of the advantages that yours has. We just have the dog that is now not a puppy. It's still getting into the trash.
Oh, it's hilarious too. Cause he's trained to give pressure, like a lot of things he's trained in, but to give like deep pressure. And Gavin hasn't really grasped that necessarily from, he just views him as a buddy and plays with him. But it's funny. We'll be sitting there and maybe we're stressed out. We were talking about the surgery. So I'm starting to get stressed and the dog jumps up on me and he's big now. He thinks he's tiny, but he's big. Jumps up on me and my wife always kind of talks for him. She's like, what do you need, sir? I'm a trained professional. I'm a trained professional. I'm good. This is what I'm trained for. And it's hilarious because it's like the opposite of what I'm needing at that point, but he's trying his best. We tried the same route, tried to train a corgi to work with us a lot. That was awful. So we went this route instead.
I haven't seen a corgi service dog.
No.
I haven't seen it all in life, but.
Not even like for us, like this wasn't even a trained dog. Yeah. We couldn't even train it to do. I mean, it was potty trained and that was about it.
Yeah.
So interesting stuff. Coach, the bye week coming up this weekend, and we'll get into, you know, why that's a good thing. A lot of injuries and such for your roster at this stage. You lose this game to Idaho State 26-18. Talk about the crowd, the experience too, because from what I saw on ESPN Plus, I mean, it looked like a really great crowd for you guys. But that's a good football team. You guys are a good football team. And it just felt like you guys were putting that surge of the comeback was you were teasing us with that throughout the game. And just couldn't quite get over that hump, but it just felt like, man, you guys were never really out of this thing.
Yes. One of the most disappointing losses I've ever been a part of. One of the hardest because, I think our whole program, team, coaching staff was aware that the community, the fans, were behind us and interested at a level they'd never been before.
Mm.
And we prepared and played with a lot of that pressure, which I think can be a good thing. I've been in the places that have national fan bases and packed stadiums and amazing environments. And I don't want to start to say that that's now an excuse why we didn't play well. I'm saying that's a reason why it hurts so bad to lose. And I don't know how good Idaho State is at this point. I think they had a fourth quarter lead against two Mountain West opponents.
Yep.
You know, that's a pretty good indication that we're dealing with a pretty good team there. They had some injuries early on in the season that they were able to come back from, and they played fast and hard against us, had a great game plan. And we dug too big of a hole. And then there was a decision that I made early in the game to go for it on fourth and short, kind of a pseudo fake punt. What we did is substitute. We had a substitute package that included our punter. We kept most of our offense on the field, so it was an offensive play, but with a kind of a substitution smoke screen, you'd call it. So our punter came in and our snapper and a couple of offensive guys went out but it didn't work. And nobody on our, we've prepared that play, that situation for weeks. Nobody on the team, second guesses the decision. It's when I make a decision, just like when the players go out to execute something, they expect me to be right. They expect what I decide to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that part is really difficult because as the head coach, you never want to be in that position where the players are disappointed in the outcome of a direct decision that I made. Coordinators get the chance the whole game to make good and bad decisions, and everybody understands the balance, but I make very few where, everybody in the whole stadium knows that was that guy's decision and mm-hmm. that was wrong. I would have never done that. That's the situation that I was in, and it's reality. Like, it didn't work, and it put us in a deeper hole that we could never quite climb out of.
I mean, as a fan, what were you guys on the 30, 31 or something like that?
The 30-yard line, yeah.
When you look at that, do you do the analytics thing? Do you look at what analytics will tell you, or is this a gut feel?
Here's the analytics. The national average on fourth and one is 83%. You almost should never punt on fourth and one, particularly in a game,
early and all that.
If our offense has been challenged, which we've been challenged to score, and we were missing six starters on offense going into that game, and we lost a seventh in Fisher Clements. And you're good on defense, then the likelihood that you should go for it on fourth and one kind of keeps growing and growing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't give away possessions to a high scoring team, which Idaho State is. You can't pass up those fourth and one opportunities. Your fourth and one opportunity is greater than your opportunity. Against two evenly matched teams, let me put it this way. If you've got two evenly matched teams, you go in with a 50% chance to win. But you have an 83% chance to win fourth downs, right? Mm-hmm. And then the opportunity to not punt the ball to the opponent, and just keep your team on the field, right? Like, all your win percentage odds just go up. So, yeah, unequivocally, the analytics are go for it on fourth and one. But there's a lot of other, decision criteria in there. There's the design of the play. There's the situation itself. And then there's the big one, did it work? And when it works, it's an indication that there were a lot of decisions that were made correctly and done right. And when it doesn't work, that falls on me. I've kind of explained this dynamic before, whether it's winning a game or winning a situation. When it works, as coaches, we always just feel like, man, I'm so grateful to the players that my thing worked. And when it doesn't work, it feels like it's all our fault.
Yeah.
If I would have just coach this part a little bit better, if I would have just put this player in that position, and it's crushing. And I don't worry about our players' confidence in me, like, right, they're around me too often, but I hate to let them down, and I let them down.
Well, and again, I, for the record, I love that decision, and I didn't know that stat on the analytics, but it makes sense because you're seeing it now. You're seeing it in the NFL too. Yeah. I mean, on their own 30, whatever. Dan Campbell does that all the time. It just comes down to, maybe it's not the wrong play call. It's just that defense was ready for that exact same situation. Cause see, Idaho State was kind of pretty aggressive on that play too. But it was interesting because that, a lot of times a play like that, coach, can be the story. And I know that probably in the back of your mind's like, man, if we could have got that, who knows? Maybe the changes the trajectory of the game. But that also, those kind of plays, if it is a negative and you end up, you gave up the touchdown, that can spiral and just be like, well, it was that from that moment. But you guys kept battling back, which was impressive to me because I thought, didn't get it on, uh-oh, and then they go down and they score. This could get out of hand now. But you guys didn't let that knock you out of this game. You had a couple of opportunities late in this game to try to come back and at least tie the game.
Yeah, first big momentum swing was right at the end of the half. We got a couple of stops in a row and we're driving, scored one, got the 2-point conversion, had a great opportunity, got the ball back with, I think it was like a minute 48 left and we're down 8 and now we've got the ball and we've been great in 2-minute situations. It's an area that we need to kind of like expand our offense around, but still find balance, in everything that we do. And so, you know, everybody on our sideline had this great feeling like, oh, we're about to climb back. We are in this.
Yeah.
And not only that, we could, you know, take this thing to a tie game at halftime. And in the first 10 minutes of the game, it just did not feel like we were going to be close in the game. So testament to the players' character, belief in each other, et cetera, a lot of good things going on. And then we get two, false start penalties and we take a sack on 2nd and 1 in that same drive. And, those things are, that's a well-coached team doesn't get false starts and a well-coached team doesn't take a sack on 2nd and 1, especially in the 2-minute drill. Now we had breakdown up front and, you know, I'm not going to put it all on the quarterback, but that's every day when we practice 2-minute, you know, the quarterback's main job in 2-minute is never take a sack. Whatever it takes, don't take a sack. You've got to be ultra aware of the pressure. And then the opposite is true in 4-minute, right? In 4-minute, never throw an incompletion. Hmm. You can call a pass play, but it's better to take a sack than it is to throw an incompletion.
You want that clock
right? So there's certain things that we just talk about all the time and remind the players as we're going on the field in those situations. So, a real failure there, not to take advantage of that, but the momentum had swung. And then, so we ended up having to punt the ball. In that situation, and Idaho State didn't have much time, but we had two critical errors in that 2-minute drill where we were on the field on defense, and they wrestled away control there at the end of the first half and took it back to a two score lead, and it was more than a 2-score lead, and at that point it was a complete gut check at halftime to battle back in it, which we did.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You look at that halftime score and you're thinking, I mean, what was it, 23-7 at that point? And you're wondering, like, hey, can this team come back and do it? But you did. You made it interesting. Well, even that first drive out the gates, you guys were rolling, and then you had Gibson had the fumble. I know you weren't thrilled about that with kind of the way some of these guys were carrying the football around. So I'm sure that's been a point of emphasis this week.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got to improve our quarterback's ability to secure the football and advance yardage. He does a pretty good job of seeing it. He's fairly elusive. He doesn't have the same like straight ahead speed that Peter has, nor does he try to use that. Like Peter will run, Peter Castelli, when he takes off with the ball, he's going to run full speed,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's kind of his weapon. He knows that he wants to use that. Not every runner does that, right? Some runner, like, you can only change it, right? It's just like a vehicle. You know, you're not going to make a sharp right turn on the highway going 65 miles an hour, right? So, some players play the game a little lower center of gravity, somewhat below top end speed to be a little more elusive side to side. Eric's a little more of that style and can be elusive and be a threat with his legs, but we're not tapping into his full potential right now. And he's got two fumbles on the season, which we've got to turn around. Those are really costly.
His body of work has been pretty good coming in as the backup. It's just those turnovers, the pick sixes, the fumbles. And I know it's easy to say this, but if you take those away, he's almost perfect.
Yeah.
But the turnovers are, I mean, those count as triple, you know, the negative when you look at it. So on one side, you got a guy that is throwing the ball. He's got a great connection with Carver Cheeks. And, it looks like with Charles Garrison too, you know, Baby Gronk, as I know he loves that nickname. You just have those turnovers. And if he can clean those up, man. He could put up even bigger numbers.
Well, and here's an indictment for our coaching staff and an opportunity in the same statement. You know, we can only improve his ability to pass the football accurately or make reads a small percentage. I don't know what that is. There's no way to scientifically quantify that. But we can improve his ability to retain possession of the football a lot. And so we should have done that better. We should have gotten better results on the field. We need him to take his part in that. We need to take our part in that. And that's why we're practicing this week on the bye. I really like when a team is on a roll. I did this many times at Southern Utah as we got that program turned. I would say, you know, we would be playing before the bye week for what I call a see you next Monday, which is a full week off. Completely revitalize yourself. You are not going to see the coaches unless you come into our office on your own. You have 3 lifts or 4 lifts, whatever it is. That's what the strength coach. There's not going to be any criticism, not going to be any practice. Your body's going to completely be rejuvenated and your mind. And our players knew in that Idaho State game, that's what we were playing for. I told them that. But we're not there. We're not on a roll. We have confidence issues at this point. We have perspective issues. We have to tighten up the screws in terms of how we do things and what we're doing. And as we've had some personnel challenges, particularly on offense, who are we? We need to pivot somewhat in terms of our identity at this point.
With the turnovers, with Gibson Jr. specifically, what are those things that you work on? Obviously in the movies, when a guy's fumbling, you see carry the ball with you through school and everybody, your teammates see him try to knock the ball out.
Yeah.
Interceptions, probably film study. Take us through that. What are those things? Because again, you just mentioned all the things not only you have to go through, but a quarterback has to go through when they're going out there thinking of, what do we do in a 4-minute situation? What do we do in a 2-minute situation? I got to know everybody's job. There's 4 million things going on through a quarterback's brain. Oh yeah. And when you do take off and run, make sure the football is secure. There is a lot going on through these dudes' brains.
Yeah. There is probably some variance around the country and with coaching staffs on what the criteria is for ball security as a ball carrier. And when the quarterback, you know, gets out of pass mode and is crossing the line of scrimmage, they become a ball carrier just like any other player on our team that's carrying the football. All of the players on our team know, if you were to quiz them, you know, 99% of them would immediately spit out the phrase, high and tight, two hands on contact. Mm-hmm. And so, in both of his fumbles, he wasn't carrying the ball high and tight, and he wasn't putting two hands in on contact or the impending contact, the traffic, however you want to put it. And so in that way, he can get better. And that's what we've got to do a better job of. If it's not showing up, there's an old coaching adage. What you see on film is either what you're coaching or what you're allowing to happen. Mm. And in this case, we're certainly not coaching that phrase, two hands on in traffic, high and tight, two hands in traffic, two hands on contact. But what we are allowing that to happen in practice. And so that's what I did. I went back and found all the examples of practice where we're not doing it. And Eric and I met, and that's coming from the head coach, which is kind of a little bit of an elevated position to take, because typically you would leave that to the position coaches. But me and the starting quarterback are always going to have a good relationship. It's part of the whole game management. You have to manage the game through the quarterback. And so the head coach, if the head coach takes that game management role, which I always have, he and I have to have a good relationship where we can talk to each other. He's got to be able to talk to me without worrying about niceties in the heat of a moment.
Sure. Oh, and it seems like he's the kind of guy that does take that criticism well. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, it seems like he's that guy.
He's tough-minded. We have no, I want to compare it. I guess I got to caveat this before I say it, because I said a moment ago, I don't feel like our team has any doubt about, you know, my judgment in terms of when to be aggressive, when to go for it on 4th and 1, how to do it. They're all behind me, win or lose. But it just hurts that I didn't deliver in that moment. And I believe that's where we all are at with Eric. And I believe that's where he's at. We have a close team. We've all worked tremendously hard to pee away that opportunity this last week with all of those fans there and all of that excitement in the community. We worked so hard. That's why it's everybody. It hurts together, right? But there's not nobody's given up here, and nobody's given up on Eric, and nobody's saying that's the reason we lost in any of these scenarios. And we don't apologize. You know what I mean? If we're going to stand up there and apologize, everybody who played more than 3 or 4 snaps has got something to apologize for. You know, that would be a 2-hour meeting. Everybody stand up and apologize for the mistake you made that you feel like you could do better. We're moving on, and that's the case with Eric and these turnovers. Is there have been reasons, there have been correctable skills, and everybody knows that he'll work hard on them.
Coach, just a couple more notes on this game, and then we can, you know, just kind of wrap up with the bye week and what that looks like for you guys. Rushing was interesting in this game. For you guys, the yards, the production wasn't there that we've seen. You know, Mathias Price didn't have one of those games. Mm-hmm. Then on the other end, you've ran into a couple of these guys where there's just one bell cow running back that really is a monster, and in this case that was Brooks for Idaho State. So talk to us a little bit about the work you guys got to do to slow down that rushing attack, because it did seem to slow down in that second half. Defensively, you guys were really sharp in that second half, but you know, they were getting that ground game going.
Sure, yeah. Particularly in the first half, we did not have the balance that we needed in terms of the fronts that we were running. We felt like Idaho State would be a little less patient in their run game, a little less aggressive in their run game. We tried to get away with a little more of passing sets, which is Idaho State's strength. And in the end, we've got to take our part in that as coaches. There's certainly some better we can play better block shed, we can play better gap control up front. We were playing we played 100% of the game with what we call six man box, which against Idaho State's formation should be enough to stop the run, at least, you know, bottle up the run and force them into some obvious pass situations. And so as coaches, we've got to know when and how to get a seventh in there and make adjustments. And we did that as the game went on, but not enough. And then in the 4 minute drill late, when they had the ball and we needed the ball back and we weren't able to stop the run, that was tremendously disappointing. We had plenty of guys there, but not in the right places. And as coaches, we have to take a piece of that, and the players need to take their piece of that. When it was a mental error or a physical mistake, a skill problem, technique problem, you know, we all need to own whatever we're in those situations. And it almost never comes down to one thing, and it certainly did not. I mean, we had one interesting thing that, you know, sometimes as like fans or something, like, because I'm a fan too, like, you tend to think, you know, if they would have had the right defense called against that run play. But a game like that, where Idaho State kind of runs a lot of the same run play over and over and over, and we can put a cut up together as coaches where the same call, you know, you got the same run play against the same defensive call five times, and you have five different results. And yeah. So it's not always about the play call, but it sometimes is. And we have to own that as coaches when it is. And then we have to make sure that the players are able to own and respond and get better when it can be a execution. Offensively, yep, we just, you know, I think I don't think we're doing enough on the edges and in the passing game to keep teams honest with our run game. And I think we've become pretty predictable in a lot of our formations and splits, and defenses are seeing that a little bit more. I think we're a little bit behind where we need to be, and that's part of really coming back to work this week offensively. Okay, who do we have available as players, and what should be our new identity? And we're not going to completely change. You know, I don't even know if fans would see a difference, you know, to the naked eye, but we definitely need to pivot. We have enough data now to know that we haven't rushed the ball consistently. A lot of times that means you're not throwing the ball well enough, and teams are piling up in the run game. So we've got to figure out how much of it is improving the run game, how much of it is improving the passing game, and then who are we and what do we have available? What are our best skill sets?
Coach, again, what do you have available? The injury bug, and you never make an excuse. I mean, you guys hit that last year with the quarterback situation. Now it just seems like every position outside of the, even though Castelli's out, but you're at least knocking on wood with Gibson. Can you give us any updates? I mean, this is probably a really good time to have the bye week to get some of these guys that you told me they're not season ending injuries. So having another weekend of nothing, or having a weekend of nothing, is probably going to be very beneficial.
Just talked with Darren Dunn yesterday, who I think, and this is not just my opinion, a lot of the teams in our league that have kind of the, you know, the lower budget or the lower spending plan, they look at our schedule sometimes and are jealous of it. I think for a long time now, Darren and the associate ADs, right now it's Dan Moy, who does a lot of the leg work. they've done a really good job of trying to find a somewhat balanced schedule, not playing too many money games. You know, like a Montana State, they'll play one money game every like 4 years just to get their players the experience of playing in an FBS stadium. You know, we have to do at least one every year, if not more. There are some teams in our league that always do two, to try to balance out their budget. So, but one of the things I talked about with Darren yesterday was, you know, that those three straight road games to have, you know, a Division II or a bye week after three straight road games, which can be common for teams like us kind of at the bottom of the spending capacity, to have three straight road games before the conference starts. Your conference would never put you on three straight road games. You would never see the NFL put somebody on the road 3 weeks in a row. It's just kind of a scheduling nightmare. And so that's where we were at last week. And usually the injuries will start to pile up. But yeah, we had Braden Monroe was out, Rocco was out, Jack Zeball was out, Hank Gibbs, Jack Bacon, Peter Castelli, like those are six starters on offense. Yeah. And then we lost Fisher Clemens in the first quarter. And so, yeah, when I say like, okay, who's available now? I'll say this, nothing, no shade to those guys that I just mentioned. We are so much better built to overcome that than we have been in the past. In the last couple of years, injuries were just, I mean, we're just decimated. We're down to true freshmen out there coming in the game that weren't ready. We got guys. I mean, Colton Patterson came in for Z-ball and played excellent at the center position, and just really stepped up. And we've got guys doing that all over the field. Zion Salvao is a true freshman. He played a bunch at right tackle. Montre Strickland's a redshirt freshman. So that O-line that now, you know, last week was out four starters.
Yeah.
We got young guys coming in and playing really well. And, so I'm so pleased with the direction and like how the recruiting has worked out. We're still really young at this point. And, like I said, we've chosen and don't think it's our path to do it with transfers. So they're making some young guy mistakes, but boy, the future for those players looks really bright. And then as coaches, we have to say, okay, well, what and how much are we capable of doing with this new group, which we have confidence in, but we have to do a really good job too, because they're going to be better in 3 and 4 years than they are right now as freshmen. And so what are they doing really well that makes us so excited? And let's make sure we're asking them to do more of that.
Yeah, very encouraging on that side of it. Coach, you're 2-3. We've gone five games already going into this bye week. I feel it, you know, and I think this community feels it. Like there's a turnaround going on. I know for you that's harder to take because you look at the 2-3. And but every single game, you guys have, every game has come down to a couple of decisions, it seems like. A few minutes left, and there's still some opportunities. And last year, I thought at this point in the season, you had some interesting games that you were close in, but then suddenly, a couple plays here and there, the score looks worse than the actual game was. That's not the case this year. So maybe another building block for this team. It feels like you're close to just getting over that hump.
Sure. Yeah. There's, you know, people will say to me sometimes, somebody just asked, one of the other coaches in the department asked me, do you think it's like one of those things where you just got to learn how to win? And I think there's definitely truth to that. That's a truism in sports. You have to learn how to win. You know, I don't know if that's where we're at necessarily, because I have, especially when I'm right in the thick of the season, there are just so many things that I don't think had anything to do with knowing how to win or the confidence to win. It's just like, look, here are two clips of you doing this correctly against the same opponent. Here are two clips of you doing this incorrectly and us suffering the consequences. Like that's where we're at right now. It's just being able to do things, do the things we can do more consistently as coaches and players. And if that's learning how to win, like, yeah, it's just kind of how you define a pretty nebulous phrase, right? Learning how to win.
Yeah. So, it's easy for sports radio hosts to say that kind of thing. Oh, they just got to learn how to win, but there's a lot to it.
Yeah. And I think it is a compliment, right? In the way of like, okay, the team is built now to win.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I don't know where Idaho State is. Their logo is like ours. It's not well respected, but their resume, I don't know why they're not getting, you know, votes. Like they had a fourth quarter lead against two Mountain West opponents. And there are other teams in our league that have no better record and are ranked still, you know, because of what they've done in years past. And that's really an FCS thing, because in the FCS you generally start out with a couple of those money games, and people will kind of excuse it if you're a quote unquote good team. But if you're a quote unquote bad team, they just look at your overall record. And so it'll be interesting to see, like, what if this Idaho State Northern Colorado game were played later in the Big Sky season, later in the Big Sky calendar, could it have been a game of the week? Could it have been something that really has the conference standings at the top of the conference on the line? I don't know. I mean, but I do think I do know this: the UNC Bears are better. We're still really confident, and we do need this bye week to kind of regroup and prepare for a really good Idaho team on the road. And I know our guys are excited about the challenge.
Yeah, off this week, and then, as you mentioned, at Idaho, and then Sacramento State. Idaho State plays Montana, I believe, this weekend, so I'll be really interested to see
Idaho State, Montana,
kind of how that stacks up too, Coach. Always appreciate you opening up on this podcast, my friend, and I know you got to jump on with the fellas here at Good Morning NOCO, so we'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thanks, Brady.
All right, Football 52, find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or 1310kfka.com.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Northern Colorado men's basketball returns to the court for the 2025 season. Be a part of the action and help the Bears defend the den. Season tickets are now on sale as the Bears defend the Big Sky Conference regular season title. Purchase tickets online by visiting uncbears.com/tickets. Remember, this is Bear Country. Go Bears.